Welcome to On Texas Football. I'm Joe Cook. Today, I'm joined by Bobby Burton, sitting in for Justin Wells. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel. Make sure you check out Inside Texas, where you can get 6 months for $29.99. Get all of Bobby's great insight, a bunch of recruiting news, and some forward-facing looks at the 2023 Longhorns. Today, we're going to look back a little bit. There was a recent list of the top 75 quarterbacks of the 2000s that ESPN put out. Bobby, fair to say that you took a little bit of issue with it, but then we'll also get into some of the players wearing uniform numbers in the 90s. We'll be counting down the Longhorns starting tomorrow, as Friday marks 99 days until the season opener versus Rice. So we'll talk about a few of the players wearing those upper 90s numbers. So, Bobby, thanks for sitting in, and sounds like you have some quarrels with the worldwide leader based off their list.
Well, Joe, I thought it was ridiculous. Baker Mayfield got beat out, for lack of a better term, at Texas Tech by not only Pat Mahomes, but Davis Webb. And I'm not sitting here trying to say that Baker Mayfield didn't have a great college career. He's certainly not the best quarterback of the 2000s era. He may have been a great quarterback in part because of the offense he played in, but you put him on another team, he's not nearly as good, in my opinion. You see that now a little bit in the NFL where he loses some of that ability to make plays. He wasn't necessarily all that fast. He was accurate, but anyways, I digress. The reality of it is in my opinion, Vince Young and Cam Newton were the two best, most dominant players, followed probably by Joe Burrow in a single season, right? Joe Burrow just was, I thought he had the best year statistically, I think we may ever see in college football, but he didn't necessarily have the career of a Vince Young, right? And the thing that all three of those guys have that Baker Mayfield and no Oklahoma quarterback in the 2000s, by the way, has, they have a national championship ring. And ultimately, and that's why I don't put Lamar Jackson, by the way, in the same category as Newton, Young, or Joe Burrow. If you don't have a national championship ring, that's really what it's all about in college football. There's no college football draft, right?
Right.
That says, okay, you're the number one overall pick. In college football, it's all about the team winning big. And add in Tim Tebow, who won two national championships, although one of them, he was not the main player. And the other thing about Tebow, he did not leave college, with a national championship. He actually got beat in the SEC championship game that year pretty handily by an Alabama team. So I look at the three best players as pretty clear cut. I feel like it's Vince Young, Cam Newton, and Joe Burrow. How you want to place those, in my opinion, I'd give Vince the nod over Cam Newton simply because Cam Newton only did it 1 year. With Joe Burrow, his year was so outstanding. I could see any number of ways, and he did it differently. Whereas Vince and Cam did it a lot with their legs and their arm, Burrow almost did it exclusively with his arm.
Yeah, I think that my four has to be Vince, Cam, Tebow, and Burrow. I put Tebow up there. I know he was playing second to Chris Leak in that 2006 year, but he was just such a player that, you know, I don't think that the article factored in for this, but he kind of kept that team together because it was going to fall apart if he wasn't there, considering all the characters, both on the staff and on the team that were there. But, yeah, I'm not as down on Baker as you are. I still think that, you know, it's hard to just discount a Heisman Trophy winning year or multiple years being in contention for it and getting Oklahoma close, but he's definitely not even in the top five for me, nowhere close to that. He did put up a lot of stats, and that probably helps, and he was helped by longevity, but yeah, he was very, very good. He's worthy of the Heisman, but he's not worthy of being the number one quarterback of the 2000s, and definitely not worthy of being past Vince Young. Colt McCoy was 12th, and that's puts him behind players like obviously Burrow, Tebow, Vince, Cam, and Baker. Also puts him behind Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Marcus Mariota, RG3, and Trevor Lawrence. And again, that's kind of like all those names kind of seem like tier two to me. Colt, I guess because of the lack of a national championship, maybe he gets a ding, but he was a four-year starter and he had a lot of wins and a conference championship, but no Heisman. So that's a tough tier to have to sort out. I think Deshaun, thanks to that senior year, makes sense at being number six. And even Trevor Lawrence, maybe Trevor Lawrence might be underrated considering what he did for Clemson in that other national title year. But, you know, it seems, you know, you're kind of splitting hairs when you're going between 9 and 12, but I think it makes sense that Colt is in that category and also, hilariously, one step above Johnny Manziel.
Well, here's the deal. I think, and you mentioned Manziel, Colt McCoy in 08 and 09 was appointment TV. And what I mean by that is everybody wanted to watch him to see what he's going to do. So was Johnny Manziel, by the way. And I think that's fair to say. He was an electric player for the Aggies. The issue that I have, it goes back to Baker Mayfield. And I just thinking about this, who would I rather face if I were a Longhorn? Would I rather face Baker Mayfield, Sam Bradford, or Kyler Murray? Baker Mayfield is third for me on that list. Like, I do not – Sam Bradford was a tremendous, tremendous player. Kyler Murray, tremendous, tremendous player that could just beat you with his feet as well as his arm. Don't want to face those guys because they're a little – I thought Baker Mayfield was just an odd selection. As it relates to Colt, I would take Colt over Baker Mayfield. He was a more dominant college football player than – Baker Mayfield, when in a different setting, you know, Colt, you saw what happened. He led his team to a national championship game appearance, something that Baker Mayfield never did, by the way, and did that in a scenario where he had very little help on offense. And you saw the fall off the year he left. That's similar to the fall off that we saw Tebow have at Florida when he left. The team fell off the cliff a little bit. And I think that those guys are very similar in that way, in my opinion. Look, I get it. It's a beauty contest. I'm not going to sit here and moan about, you know, Miss Indiana beating Miss California or one quarterback over another. But my bigger point is when you put out lists like this, if you don't calculate national championships, if you don't calculate things like fear factor of who you actually have to face, in a one game situation, the lists are just stats hogs. You know, who cares what you did against Kansas?
Well, you grabbed something against Kansas if you're trying to bring this back to Texas a little bit, looking at through the list, seeing some guys that maybe Steve Sarkisian coached. I know Matt Leinart is on there. He is number 17. Bryce Young wasn't really coached. Well, yeah, he coached him. He didn't really get to deploy him too much at Alabama because of Mac Jones. Tua is on there at number 21. Carson Palmer at number 23. Let's see if we can get any more. There's not really a lot of other candidates, I would say, from the Steve Sarkisian tree at that point. Mac Jones there, number 38. A lot of Big 12 guys. Colin Klein, number 41. He's way different than any of the other ones on that list. And just because of not only the offense that they ran, but just the physical stature that he had. Eli Manning, Arch's uncle, number 47. That's kind of about it as far as it goes for anything Texas related, unless you wanted to go really, really far out there and say, oh, Matt Ryan, he's another Steve Sarkisian quarterback, but that was with the Falcons, checking in at number 75. So, you know, it is off season. It's list season. You know, in about a month, it's going to get to talking season, and we'll be moving on from stuff about like, oh, who's the top quarterback of this decade? Who's the top running back? I guess one quick question. I'll put you on the spot. If they did this list for running backs of the 2000s, who comes to mind first?
Adrian Peterson.
Yeah. I almost thought about Trent Richardson, but I think it's got to be Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, Trent Richardson is a good running back. He's not Adrian Peterson. But how many years did he even play in the 2000s? A guy like Eli Manning didn't play many years in the 2000s either. I thought Adrian Peterson's been the best running back in the last 20 years. Unless I'm missing somebody recently, I don't put Bijan in that category.
No,
simply because Bijan didn't have the ride out speed that Adrian Peterson did. And Adrian, a little tougher runner, maybe not as elusive as Bijan, though, or have as good a hands out of the backfield. But that's a big one. Let's get going on. I really like the idea of what your list was, Joe. And what I mean by that, the idea of breaking down the players in the 90s, since we're 99 days away. And then I want to go into Sadir Mitchell at 99, Chris Ross at 97, and Alfred Collins at 95, and what they mean. What's your idea about talking about these guys and where you want to take this? Because I'm ready to talk about them. I like Sadir. I like where Texas is going here.
Yeah. So we always have at Inside Texas on our message board and on social media, we count down to kickoff, and we have great pictures from Will Gallagher, who either finds guys on the current team or Longhorn legends to, post a picture of, and usually sparks a good bit of discussion about, players of the past. So if you brought out, let's say we bring out 99, there'd be a lot of talk about Keandre Coburn, who just got drafted by the Chiefs. And, you can go back and think about Roy Miller and other guys like that. But what we're going to try and do is we're going to include those look backs. We're going to include all the different, memories and great pictures and things like that. But we're also going to do a little bit of forward-facing ideas, projection about guys currently wearing that number. That'll be something we try to post every single day. When you get to the 67s, even though not to slight Malik Ogbo, but let's say you get to the 59s. No one's really wearing 59 that I can think of. I can't even think of one off the top of my head. We may interject some, looks at assistant coaches or things like that. So, but the idea is to look at pretty much every single person on the roster as we're counting down the days until kickoff. And yeah, Sadir Mitchell's that first one. The number 99 makes sense for someone that big, big nose tackle out of New Jersey. And even though he was probably one of the biggest recruiting wins for Texas because Texas A&M wanted him, Georgia wanted him, I'm sure Rutgers wanted him, one of the top football players at a pretty good program in New Jersey, he may not be pressed into much action this year. There are a lot of players ahead of him. I think I included T'Vondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, Vernon Broughton, Alfred Collins, who we'll get to. Trill Carter is going to be in that mix. Aaron Bryant's still on the roster. Obviously a different body type than Zach Swanson, but that's five or six or seven right there. Also, if you look at what Sadir Mitchell is listed at on the roster, he's 360. And not to say that that's a bad thing when you're 6'6", or at least that's what you're listed at, but you're not going to be able to provide a ton, when you have that many guys ahead of you and you're still probably in some needing, you need to reshape a little bit of your body. So I think with a lot of these larger defensive tackles that Texas has had in the past few years, a redshirt year always does them well. Keandre Coburn redshirted, Moro Ojomo redshirted. I think T'Vondre Sweat did, but I'm not sure. And they did so with the 4-game rule. So what a lot of redshirt players are able to do is go through a lift program designed just for them and maybe not always, thinking in light of game week. Now it'll still be positive for what they have on game week, but Sadir Mitchell is going to have to probably work on getting that conditioning up, getting his strength up. And it's going to be tough unless he's just some supernova for him to crack that rotation with so many more talented guys and experienced guys ahead of him at defensive tackle, even though they like to rotate a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to diverge from your thought here. There's no way Sadir Mitchell redshirts unless there's injury. He's too big of a presence on the interior. They lack that, in my opinion, after T'Vondre Sweat. They don't really have a true nose after T'Vondre Sweat. Byron Murphy is a nose tackle, but he's a little undersized. Trill Carter is still a little undersized. He's not that bonus sized guy. And while all that you said about his conditioning is true, he's a good enough player that they're going to have to find time for him. I thought what we saw in the spring game was very interesting from him in that all spring we had not heard much about how good he was doing or how bad he was doing. He just hadn't been a plus player. Well, he shows up in the spring game. I think he has two tackles, is a constant presence and a constant nuisance when he's in the game. Jerry made the comment to me, Jerry Hamilton made the comment that he could just be a gamer. That
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Could be part of it. It could also be that he's just that big and just that athletic that he's going to do something no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about the term supernova that you used, but I feel like Texas doesn't have another body like him. And I just feel like they're going to find a way, whether it's short yardage, not unlike, you know, Cam Williams didn't redshirt last year.
Right, but I think Cam Williams spent most of his time on field goal block, and that's what I was going to go into. Maybe that's where he finds his 10 or 11 games, because he's 6'6", because he's 360, and because he's got that reach. And I bet that's where Cam, if he's not gunning for time, probably at one of the guards, or if something happens and he ends up at tackle, Cam will probably find himself there again. And that may be what unseats his redshirt this year.
I would be surprised if Sadir Mitchell didn't see time at defensive tackle in 10 out of 12 regular season games. I'll go further because they're not as deep. Alfred Collins is not a typical defensive tackle. He's not that big-bodied guy. What Texas is lacking right now, in my opinion, are the really big-bodied guys. Sadir Mitchell is the only one on the roster outside of T'Vondre Sweat that is that really, really plus-sized body. T'Vondre Sweat goes out. Who are you going to have there? Well, Collins isn't that guy. Murphy's not that guy. Broughton is certainly not that guy. He gets pushed around way too much. Swanson's not that guy. Aaron Bryant could be that guy in time. Sadir Mitchell's ready-made. I think he plays regular time in at least 10 of 12 games this year. Could be wrong, but that's where I come out with him. Very high on him, by the way. Very, very
high. All right. You want to move on to number 97? Number 98 was left vacant by Moro Ojimo. We don't know who will be there. We'll probably find out at Big 12 Media Days. So number 97, Christopher Ross from Galena Park North Shore. He was a player that I think a lot of the coaches and I think we all expected would grow into being kind of like Moro Ojimo, a guy who kind of plays in that 285, 290 range as a three technique, can bump out in certain situations. But it sounded like over the course of the spring and throughout his first year on campus that gaining weight, not that he's not working hard, but just gaining weight has been something that hasn't come easy to him, and that they may be trying him out at some of the edge positions, whether it be Jack or Buck. And, you know, looking back at something that Eric wrote over on InsideTexas.com, he's behind Ethan Burke. And granted, there's a lot of mixing and matching with Baron Sorrell and Justice Finkley, even Ethan Burke, Jamon Tapp, Colton Vosick. There's a lot of different things going on, but Chris Ross has kind of found himself more towards that weak side edge position as opposed to growing even into a strong side edge or a three technique type player. I think he's going to probably end up getting some rotational snaps, kind of like Justice Finkley did last year. But I'm not sure if he's the type of player that this year, considering they're still kind of figuring out his body a little bit with the size and hard gaining that he's had to go through. I think he'll see snaps, but I don't think he's going to be just like this featured presence. And I don't think that's going to happen maybe until a couple years down the line, especially when there's someone like Jare Bledsoe and even, you know, if they just someone like that, even Darian Gallette, whenever he comes back healthy, there's just a lot of different players there that make it tough for me to see Chris Ross being just a consistent presence on the field this year at one of the edge spots.
I agree with you. I think that Ross out of North Shore High School, tremendous program. A lot of guys at North Shore have maxed out, right? That's the thing about great programs in high school. Unlike in Texas, unlike almost any other state, guys can top out a little bit early. I don't know that Chris Ross topped out, so I don't want to put that tag on him. But from a weight perspective, he might have. You know, he was already playing interior at North Shore. Well, now he's playing on the exterior at Texas, if that tells you anything. But he is fast. The coaches do like that he made some movement this year, Joe. He wasn't stagnant, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't just there were some guys that maybe were stagnant this spring and didn't make moves at all. Chris Ross actually did some things that caught some coaches' eyes at times this year. I feel like he and a guy like Jamon Tapp, for example, are at the risk of running out of room to grow and or become players in this system. And so he is one of those guys that's on my list of, okay, what's he going to do? And what and who really is he going to be? You say he's lost. He's in a shuffle. Well, is he lost in the shuffle? Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we don't know yet with Chris Ross. This year, I think will be a big one for him. Not only from a growth perspective, but, you know, finding out who he really is and whether or not he's good enough to play at this level, at a level that Texas needs and wants.
Right. He's listed at, during the spring, he was listed at 6'2", 246 pounds, which is, that's edge play right there. And that's good size for Buck and maybe a little lighter for Jack than you'd like, but it's definitely not a defensive tackle. So he's going to have to prove himself there against a position where the talent has been upgraded in the past few years with guys like Justice Finkley, Colton Vosick, Ethan Burke. Like it's, and I know he was part of those classes, but he's going to have to prove himself at a position maybe he didn't think he was going to be playing. I guess number 95, there's no number 96 unless you want to look at Gabe Lozano, who is a kicker who I don't think has seen action in a game, or if he has, it's been in blowout opportunities. But we will look at Alfred Collins. And, you know, sometimes we talk about Alfred Collins as a lot of untapped potential based off his size, based off his athletic ability. I think what sometimes gets lost is that Texas has asked Alfred Collins to play, I think, three different positions. They've asked him to play three technique. They've asked him to play nose tackle. They've asked him to play defensive end. And we all remember that 2020 Cotton Bowl Alamo Bowl where he made that diving play against Colorado. And it was a great play. And there are some flashes where he gives offensive linemen fits just one-on-one, but it's just not enough to where the coaches, two different staffs, have rendered him needed on the field on a play-by-play-by-play basis. And he's also just had other, you know, NFL draft picks there ahead of him. So this is a big year for him. Obviously, we know that the way Texas uses defensive tackles, there are two guys that go on the field first, but the two guys behind them get just as many snaps. I think Tavondre Sweat may have had more snaps than Keandre Coburn this past year. So this is a big opportunity for Collins because along with Murphy, Sweat, and maybe Trill Carter, he shouldn't be behind Trill Carter. He should be right behind Murphy and Sweat making a lot of plays and proving that, you know, the five-star ranking, all the athleticism, everything we've heard about him is not just hype and something that we'll see on the football field. We've seen it, but it just has to happen a lot more often.
It's interesting, Joe, to me. His mom played basketball at Texas, so he's a legacy of sorts. He came into Texas having played basketball as his senior spring. And so he hadn't truly dedicated himself to the weight room, yet they immediately put him at defensive tackle. Tried to make him an end. They've moved him around based on the different staffs. They've decided he's a defensive tackle, but more of a 3-4 technique, right? And I thought that's the right – I think that long-term, that's the right spot for him. The question I have for him is he dedicated enough to become the player that he can become? Because he athletically has a chance to be an absolute terror as a pass rusher out of the 3 or 4 eye stop spot. I mean, just he is a natural mover. He's quick. He's long-armed. This is a guy, and you know, Jerry uses the term contract year, right?
Yeah.
This is a guy that's in a contract year. If he can be the guy, Joe, that we think he can, he may be the straw that stirs the drink on defense. He may be the guy that makes it easier for Jalen Ford to make plays. He may open it up for Byron Murphy to get more sacks. And they did some things, you know, Ian Boyd, the X's and O's guy at Inside Texas, did a couple of nice things with Alfred Collins and takeaways from the spring game and some of the twists they used with Alfred specifically that really caused some problems for the Texas offensive line. Now, you can say, well, he was going up against this guy or that guy on the offensive line. The reality of it is that those guys have seen those twists and stunts before because they're working against the same guys in practice. And if it's still giving them problems, at some level, that's the players making a difference. So I think there's some hope here. And from what I hear from behind the scenes, I think there's some real hope as it relates to Alfred Collins being really, really good in this contract year. I just don't like talking about woulda, coulda, shoulda so
right.
much. And it feels like, you know, the old saying, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 3 times, what are we talking about here? Mm-hmm. Well, this would be the fool me 3 times potentially, right? And so I wish Alfred Collins nothing but the best of luck. And I do think he could be a standout player. But I don't know right now if he's in the weight room every day, if he's really gearing up to have that absolute banner season that could make a difference between him being a – I mean, he's got first-round draft pick potential. It's not a – he's just a guy versus not being picked at all and never making money in the NFL. That's the, you know, that you talk about high ceiling, low floor. He's the ultimate low floor, high ceiling player on the entire team right now for me.
Right. I think the key for Alfred Collins is, are you good enough to make this a 4-man rotation still? And if not, then that's going to have downstream effects on the entire Texas defense. And they should be able to find that, you know, if they can't find number 3, then they're going to have a lot more problems trying to number 4 too. It's just a downstream issue. So that's my big question for him this year. So I think that about does it. Hey, after 95, we got Jare Bledsoe, Tavondre Sweat, Colton Vosick, and Ethan Burke, and then Byron Murphy, Baron Sorrell. We're going to get into some really good names over the course of discussion about as we go through the numbers. So, Bobby, thank you for pitch hitting for Justin. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel. We're bringing you Texas football content every single day on Texas football. We'll have a lot in the coming days just from some great guests and otherwise. Make sure you check out InsideTexas.com. You can get 6 months, so that'll get you to Thanksgiving just about for $30, $29.99. You'll get all the way through the season, recruiting, official visits, all that stuff. Thank you so much, Bobby, and we will see you next time on Texas Football.